Cook, Judge Fred Young, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the Second District. Welcome, Judge Young.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Paul Rose here on behalf of Goodyear and the other appellants. I have with me at council table my partner Kevin Iver and Gary Krueger of Goodyear. I'd like to reserve any unused time for rebuttal. I anticipate that'll be about 4 minutes. Thank you for accepting review of this case. It's an extremely important case for policyholders of all types in Ohio, and it's about four things. It's about protecting the right to trial by jury. It's about protecting the sanctity of contract. It's about protecting the environment by ensuring that in a proper case such as this, insurance proceeds will be available to clean the environment. Often those will be the only private dollars available for that purpose. And finally, it's about honoring time-tested rules of insurance policy construction that this court has developed and consistently applied over decades. The first proposition of law concerns the all sums issue. This is the only proposition of the three that applies to both trial sites. All parties agree that if there's property damage during a policy period, that policy is triggered such that it's potentially responsive to the claim. The issue is, when multiple policies are triggered, how much is each policy responsible to pay? Goodyear looks for the answer to that question to the coverage grant of the policy, which says that an insurer will pay on behalf of the insured all sums that the insured becomes legally obligated to pay as damages because of property damage. It's Goodyear's position that in this context, all sums means all sums, or at least that's a reasonable enough reading that the language ought to be construed that way in Goodyear's favor as the policyholder.
Tell me why, you have in your brief obviously, but tell me why in a case like this where the occurrences have occurred over a long period of time, and we have insurance coverage that becomes effective, and then in a couple instances not effective, and it's effective. Why is the pro rata approach to coverage in a case such as this not the appropriate standard to use?
Your Honor, your question presumes some facts that aren't quite our case, but I will respond. And you referenced in your question the occurrence definition. I think that's very important. Occurrences are defined, the word occurrence appears in the coverage grant, and an occurrence is defined in such a way that a policy will respond in a single year for property damage in many years. And at each site here, we have just one occurrence that lapses for more than one policy year. Now, the only guidance that seems directly on point that the policy gives us as to how much each triggered policy pays is the all sums language in the coverage grant. It's the insurer's position that all sums in this context does not mean all sums, but means an allocated portion of sums. And significantly, it's their position that no other reading of that language is reasonable, such that their interpretation has to be adopted by this court. But we have a lot of guidance on this issue. At the time of trial, every court to ever consider this issue under Ohio law agreed with Goodyear. The most recent pronouncement of this case comes from the Supreme Court of Delaware. In August of this year, that court said, we will follow the majority rule and not read a pro rata allocation of coverage into the insurer's policies in this case. That is the national majority rule. Our neighboring states of Pennsylvania and Indiana agree. This court in Motorist Mutual versus Tomansky considered an all sums coverage grant and held that an insurer cannot partially escape its coverage obligation merely because another policy is potentially responsive to the claim. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, this court gave us, I believe, definitive guidance on this issue 2 weeks ago in its decision of Anderson versus Highland House, when this court wrote, in order to defeat coverage, the insurer must establish not merely that the policy is capable of the construction it favors, but rather that such an interpretation is the only one that can be fairly placed on the language in question. The court then went on to say that when insurers are trying to use their policy language to limit coverage, it'll be given such a construction only if it does so clearly, specifically, and unambiguously. Goodyear's interpretation of this clause is supported by the plain language of the policies. It is a reasonable interpretation, if not the most reasonable interpretation, and it's for that reason that most courts, including most state Supreme Courts, have agreed with Goodyear. The second issue is the notice issue. Proposition of law applies, number two applies only to the motor wheel disposal site and only as to primary insurers. This is a factual dispute, and the issue is whether the insurers have presented such overwhelming evidence of prejudice that this issue could not possibly be decided against them by a reasonable juror. The critical facts are these. TCE was disposed of at the motor wheel site until 1961 by a prior owner. Motor Wheel and Goodyear learned of TCE contamination 21 years later in 1982. Goodyear gave notice to the insurer's agent within 4 months of learning of that contamination. The insurers contend they didn't get notice for 20 months. Regardless of whether the period of delay is 4 months or 20 months, it's significant to note this. No witnesses died during that period. None became forgetful. No documents were lost. There were no changes to the site. There was no significant event of any kind that occurred during that period.
What about the 1970 period? 1970, 1982, that there were documents that were records that were not available, and you had the former employees, I guess, or persons whose memories had somewhat faded, and the Michigan Natural Resources Department made it pretty clear that there was going to be liability, or at least disposal of toxic waste, liquid or solid chemicals, waste oil, an area therefore of hazardous undertaking and should not be allowed. That's a pretty clear warning, is it not?
Your Honor, that is not our record. The insurers refer to the 1970s periods largely through references to incompetent evidence in the record, or they draw inferences from the evidence in the record that aren't warranted. The only documents in the record regarding the 1970s that have been admitted and that are reliable are exhibits 169 and 170. What those two exhibits show is that in the 1970s, Goodyear Motor Wheel and the state of Michigan were having some housekeeping disputes. Motor Wheel thought that its use of the landfill at that time was completely appropriate. The state of Michigan did not agree. Who was right? Goodyear was right. Time has proven that absolutely nothing that Goodyear or Motor Wheel placed in that landfill during the 1970s has caused any contamination whatsoever. Goodyear's use of the landfill in the 1970s was completely appropriate, and that time period is completely irrelevant to this coverage case. Remember, we're concerned with one chemical, TCE. It was disposed of by a prior owner only up until 1961. This case could not possibly be more factually distinct from the Ormet case. That sounded too absolute. This case is extremely distinct from the Ormet case. In Ormet, all the significant regulatory events occurred years before notice was given. In this case, all of the significant regulatory events occurred years after notice was given. For example, the PRP letter sent by the EPA advising Goodyear that it was potentially responsible was sent 4 years after these insurers had notice.
Are you arguing coverage or allocation?
This is the notice issue, Your Honor, which goes to coverages to the motor wheel site.
Have you been denied by every company on that site?
Every company, interestingly, by none of them on the basis of late notice in their denial letters.
I'm wondering why we're arguing, why we're doing the Ormet case.
Yes, because at this point we're on the notice issue, which is the second proposition of law.
In the Ormet, they also knew of the contamination all the while.
That's right. In Ormet, there was no question, no issue of fact, but that the policyholder knew in 1966, 26 years before notice, of groundwater contamination. In this case, the record is consistent that the first Goodyear knew of groundwater contamination was in late December of 1982, a mere 4 months before it gave notice. In Ormet, the complaint by the EPA and the federal order for cleanup of the site in regard to the motor wheel site occurred 11 years after these insurers had notice. And the key is this. Unlike in Normet, these insurers had an opportunity to participate every step along the way. They simply chose not to. Now, what's the law? The insurers have to present evidence of prejudice that's material and significant. And on directed verdict, that evidence has to be so overwhelming that no reasonable jury could find against them on this notice issue. The record in this case, I believe, is beyond any reasonable dispute that there was no prejudice, but certainly that issue should have gone to the jury.
Counsel, I'd like to take you back. I think it's part of your first issue on allocation. In your case, you're arguing that you have the right to exhaust one policy first. Are you also arguing that that then gives you the right to go to your excess coverage, or do you then have to exhaust any other policies that may apply before you go to excess? Or is that even an issue?
Well, Your Honor, it may be an issue. The excess policies provide that they will respond to the claim as soon as the underlying policy limit is exhausted. And in the schedules of insurance in these excess policies, they refer to one underlying policy. It's clear that when the primary policy is exhausted on a claim, then Goodyear has a right against the overlying policy.
Because the lower court basically added them all up and said, you have enough coverage, you can't get to excess. You're saying, well, if I only have a million coverage on one, and my claim is 11, and I exhaust one, I can go to excess, I don't have to exhaust the other underlying. That's what you're saying?
That's right, Your Honor. That's how the policies are structured, that's how they're worded, and that's how most courts nationally regard the policyholders right in this respect. The final proposition of law concerns the pollution exclusion. This applies only to the Army Creek site and only as to travelers. The issue is, what is meant by the phrase discharge, seepage, release, emission, discharge, seepage, release, or escape? The answer is that virtually every court to consider this issue around the country and the dissent below all agreed that that refers to the migration of wastes from landfills, not the placement of wastes in landfills. The facts here are very simple. Goodyear's Motor Wheel Delaware plant sent waste to the Army Creek landfill. It did so using a licensed hauler who sent the waste to a government-owned and operated landfill that the county by ordinance required that hauler to use. In short, Motor Wheel could not possibly have handled these wastes more responsibly and more appropriately than it did. Fact witnesses, expert witnesses, Judge Slaby below all noted that there's absolutely no evidence that Motor Wheel ever expected those wastes to escape from the landfill and contaminate the environment. Your Honor, that is the critical question, because the pollution exclusion reads this way. Coverage is excluded if the policyholder expects or intends a seepage, release, etc. So the critical issue here is what the policyholder's expectation was. All of the evidence by all of the witnesses observed by Judge Slaby is that Motor Wheel had no such intention. Some metals did, however, escape from our wastes and leave the landfill. Now, expert witnesses below testified consistently that during this period, landfills were regarded as environmental protection devices, which were designed and expected to contain wastes. Many of the cases cited by Goodyear reflect that concept.
Your argument, I think, is that as you say, back then, it was believed that if you put this stuff in the soil, it didn't seep out. Is that right, or didn't?
That's right, Your Honor. That was the
concern. Seep out of the soil. Now, of course, we know it does.
And not only is that my argument, but that was consistently the testimony regarding the expectation of these witnesses and everybody at that period. Now, they argue that the exclusion ought to apply if the policyholder merely expected to deposit wastes in the landfill. Well, what's the law? 21 courts have considered this issue in the context of landfill disposal. Virtually all of them have agreed with Goodyear, 18 of the 21. Four state Supreme Courts have considered this issue. Two in the context of landfill disposal, all have agreed with Goodyear. Why do virtually all these courts agree? The opinions are clear. They agree for two reasons. First of all, the insurer's argument violates virtually every doctrine of insurance policy construction. And secondly, it's clear that at this time, landfills were expected to contain wastes and not permit releases that would harm the environment. But I believe that this court, in essence, decided this issue 2 weeks ago in the Anderson versus Highland House case, when it held that when construing a pollution exclusion, If there's a reasonable interpretation that supports the policyholder under Ohio Rules of Policy Construction, that interpretation must be adopted.
Are you here on behalf of Goodyear advocating the reasonable expectations test for insurance policies?
Well, Your Honor, I guess what I'm principally here on behalf of Goodyear is advocating the application of Anderson to this case, in which, and to follow this court's own dictate, that if a reasonable construction can be found that favors the policyholder, it ought to be the rule of this court. And what better indication could there be that Goodyear's construction is reasonable than the fact that virtually every court and every state Supreme Court to ever consider the issue has agreed with Goodyear.
The allocation issue, are you here because Goodyear was self-insured for a portion of the loss?
No, Your Honor. Goodyear, as it turns out, really wasn't self-insured for any of the loss. In different years, they had different deductibles or retentions, but there was insurance through all of these periods. Now, there are scattered years where the policies Goodyear purchased, unfortunately, were purchased from insurance companies that became insolvent. So for those periods, no, it's not a problem in this instance, Your Honor. No, because those...
Because your allocation, I'm still having trouble filing the allocation. I understand the notice, the RMAP, and all of that. We've decided that, or at least we've had several cases on that issue. Why are you fighting the allocation between the various companies?
Your Honor, I'm not...
As long as you recover the total sum.
Well...
If you don't recover the total sum...
Your Honor, I guess what I'm arguing is that because Goodyear bought all sums coverage, it's entitled to recover all sums for which it's liable under all the policies that have that coverage grant. Now, it's true that when the insurers pay and make Goodyear whole, they will have rights of contribution inter se. I don't have any problem with that. I think that's completely appropriate. But their equitable rights of contribution inter se cannot limit Goodyear's contract rights under the all sums coverage grant that the insurers wrote. And that most courts...
Under all the policies or under a single policy? Under the all sums language. Kind of like a joint and several liability.
Your Honor, it is very much joint and several liability. Because Goodyear bought these policies that say all sums. We own them. They computed an appropriate premium for them. We paid it. They're our policies. When we get a claim, it's our entitlement to assign that claim to any of the all sums policies that are triggered. That's the rule nationally, and that has been the rule in Ohio. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Mr. Scott.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of this Honorable Court, good morning. My name is Hugh Scott, and I represent the Travelers Indemnity Company, and I will be arguing on behalf of the appellee insurers in this case. Let me turn, if I might, to the first issue that Goodyear has argued this morning, the so-called all sums argument. And that issue, Your Honors, may be stated in the simple, following simple proposition, which is, the question is, where an insurance policy contains explicit language restricting the coverage to damage that occurs during the policy period, should this court construe the policy to also apply to damage that occurs before and after the policy period? That is the fairly simple proposition, and we suggested to the court that the answer to that is no, it shouldn't. Now, this issue has been the subject of a great deal of litigation nationally, and in fact, we believe, contrary to Goodyear's position, that the majority of the courts throughout the country support our position. We believe that, in fact, a majority of the state Supreme Courts deciding their own state's laws have rejected the all sums argument. That is discussed in our brief at pages 15 to 21. And I think that the most significant thing for this court is that for this court, this is an issue of first impression. The closest this court comes is the earlier decision in the 1970s of the Tomansky case. And the Tomansky case, in fact, dealt with a situation where there were two insurance policies that covered the same year that covered automobiles that were involved in an accident. And this court held that where you had that type of situation, policies covering the same year and the same accident, that indeed both insurance policies would be liable for the damage. We do not disagree with that at all. We agree with that proposition. But what is before the court is a very different situation. And that is a situation where you have damage over a period exceeding 40 years. You have a series of separate insurance policies that incepted for each of those 40 years. And the question not addressed in Tomansky is, when you have damage outside of the policy period, should the policy cover damage outside either before or after?
Counsel,
that is the question here.
Counsel?
Yes, Justice Stratton.
When I first was reading these briefs, it made sense. Allocation sounded like a good, reasonable, fair thing to do. But I had to say I was quite impressed with the United Policyholders amicus brief, which went through a parade of horribles that results from when you require the insured to do the allocation. Why shouldn't the insured get what they pay for? And if it's a damage outside the policy period, they don't get that. It's pure and simple. Why should they have to do the allocation? Why can't they recover from the policy? And then you insurance companies be the ones that have to fight out the allocation issues. Why should that be their burden when they paid for a policy to issue coverage for one incident, and that's what they're entitled to?
The answer, Your Honor, it comes directly from the plain language of the policy. And I think that, given that this is an issue of first impression in this court, I think I would respectfully suggest the court begin and end with looking at what the plain language of the contract is. Because
we've never said in an auto policy, if you've got two policies that have 100 coverage each, you can only get 50 from one and 50 from the other. We've never held that.
Oh, no, but Your Honor, and we agree with that proposition. That is the Tomansky situation, because when you have an auto situation, you have two policies that cover the same policy period. And the grant of coverage is for a policy period. If you had two general liability policies that covered the same year, then we would have no quarrel with the notion that each policy ought to be responsible for the up to its limits, the full amount of the damage. But what we have here is a different situation, because unlike the automobile situation, you have damage that occurs in year 1, 2, 3, up through year 40 or so, and you have a series of policies. So in answering Your Honor's question, which is you know, why should the insured not be able to look to other policies and let the insurer sort it out, I ask Your Honor to look at the plain text of the insurance policy. And what the plain text of the policy says is that, and this contains the all sums language, and it's important to look at the language, because I think what Anderson tells us is you have to look at the contract, you have to look at the plain text. And what this policy says is, the company will pay on behalf of the insured all sums, that's what Goodyear focuses on, which the insured shall become legally obligated to pay as damages because of property damage to which this insurance applies. Key language, to which this insurance applies. Then it goes on, Your Honor, to define property damage. And it says that property damage means, I'm quoting, physical injury or destruction of tangible property which occurs during the policy period. So what I suggest to this court is that the plain text of the policy doesn't just say all sums. What it says is, it says all sums to which this insurance applies, meaning.
But then you're just a matter of proof. They have to prove that the leakage occurred during your particular period of coverage, and this is the damage that happened during your particular coverage.
If that were what they were doing, Your Honor, we wouldn't be here today. What Goodyear did in this case was Goodyear came in and said, we have, take the Lansing, Michigan dump site. We have 40 plus years of damage beginning in the 1930s to the 1970s. And for that period of time, we have a total of $11.6 million in damage. We offer no proof at all about how much damage occurred during the Travelers policy in 1976, how much damage occurred during the Liberty Mutual policies in the 1960s. All we're offering is we have 40 years of damage, and it's $11.6 million. Well, to make out a claim under the policy, it's a matter of well-established insurance law that what the insured has to do is the insured has to come forward with evidence that there was an accident, that some damage occurred, and secondly, how much of it the insurance policy applies to. I mean, if you're proving an automobile claim, you've got to prove how much damage was done to the car.
Counsel, this seems to me to be not dissimilar to the problems that have cropped up in DES cases and some other drug cases where you have clear-cut injury for which there is clear-cut responsibility by some drug company. Here you have clear-cut injury, insurance coverage, but a horrendous problem of proof as to how much injury occurred on which insurance company's watch. Now, what would be wrong with taking the approach that some courts have taken, our court did not, but some courts across the country, where they did a market share analysis on and in fact, I think in that case, the drug companies all agreed to responsibility at various times. Here,
take Goodyear's approach. We have this damage occurring over a period of time. We have all of these insurance policies. You put it in, they have coverage. If there's a year in which there's insufficient coverage, perhaps then that's a nick out of Goodyear. But it's all there, and it's prorated on how much, how many years, months, days each policy was in effect. So here's the loss, $11 million. Here's the insurance coverage, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, depending on the company and the amount. And just allocate it out that way, instead of embroiling everyone in an enormous litigation battle on issues of proof that are almost impossible.
Well, I think I agree with Your Honor, if I heard Your Honor's hypothetical correctly. I mean, our position here is that what should happen is, if you do have 40 years of damage, and it's $11 million, that in fact the rational way to deal with it is to do a proration.
And that's what you're advocating.
And that's what we're asking. And,
right.
And Your Honor, let me respond in terms of you're referring to the law that's going up in DES cases and other
right.
kinds of areas. The let me take a step back. The contract here, Your Honor, the court's construing a contract. What the contract says is that each insurance company is only liable for the damage that happens during its year, during its policy period. And what happens in the real world is Goodyear comes to court and Goodyear proves total damages for the 40 years, but doesn't offer any proof on the, even attempt to offer proof on the individual years. So what courts around the country have done in that situation here is to resolve the conundrum Your Honor posited, is to say, okay, we will in effect create a presumption that you can spread the damage and allocate it pro rata. We don't disagree with that. We think that's a perfectly, in the absence of proof of specific damages in a year, that's a perfectly rational and sensible way to do it. And I would point out that this court, in fact, has done a similar kind of thing already in Ohio. Your Honors may recall, mentioned in our brief, was the Buckeye Union case decided a couple of decades ago, which deals with a situation where you have two insurance policies, and both insurance policies say, we only cover unless there's no other insurance. So you have these conflicting other insurance policies. And they both apply to a loss. What do you do in that situation? And what this court did was, again, judicially resolve it by saying, well, we're going to prorate.
And you would be content, your approach to this would be content to say to Goodyear or any other company that faces this kind of thing, put on your proof as to what your total coverage over the years affected was, year one, year two, year three, what the total damages are, and then you can walk away from it. And in any individual disputes among companies as to coverage are something that they battle out.
Well, let me...
From that point on.
What the way I understand the proration that Your Honor is talking about is, if Goodyear comes in and puts on proof that there has been, say, 40 years of environmental damage here, and we've got 40 different insurance policies with excess policies sitting above them. Our position first would be that the contract requires that the policyholder should make a good faith attempt to prove how much damage occurred during each year. And the reason is because it might be that there's more damage at the beginning when they're doing a lot of dumping and the damage trails off toward the end of the period of time. It could be exactly the opposite for the way that the environmental factors work on the pollution. I don't know.
That's what your proposition of law says, not the way you answered this question originally. It seemed to me originally you said, yes, we could have a market share analysis allocation over the 40 years. That's not what your proposition of law says, and that's why I'm very interested in you answering this question.
As I understand our proposition of law, Your Honor, we're simply positing that each policy should only be held to be responsible per the contract language for the dollars allocated to that year.
For the whole amount over the 4 years.
Right, exactly. But it's also conceivable. I'm simply pointing out, Your Honor, that it's conceivable you could have a situation where you had multiple years of damage and the policyholder might come in and prove, well, this much really should be allocated to this year.
It's also conceivable that's impossible to prove exactly when the damage occurred.
And Justice Resnick, that's the point. When if the policyholder can't prove or doesn't prove how it should be allocated, then picking up on Justice Pfeiffer's point, then a rational thing for the court to do would say, Each policy should be responsible for the damage during the policy period, which we will presume to be a pro rata share, 1/40 or whatever. So at that point, Goodyear can go to the travelers and collect for the 5 years that travelers issued policies. Goodyear then would go to Liberty Mutual and collect for the 5 years that Liberty Mutual issued policies.
Yeah, because you're,
and so
you're,
forth.
I mean, the next sequel to your argument is that this is a case in which you can't determine how much each company is liable for. Isn't that right? Or you can't prove it?
No, you
think you can prove how much pollution was created in the year 1981, 82, 83 by year, by
well,
coverage.
Goodyear did not offer any proof, didn't attempt
right.
to address that
right.
issue. Now, what we're suggesting is that the allocation schemes that have been adopted elsewhere in the country, applying the principle that we're talking about, is what courts have said is if the policyholder doesn't offer proof or can't, then we'll in effect create a judicial presumption that it's spread equally, a pro rata kind of allocation.
But isn't the reason they didn't offer proof is you haven't gotten to that stage yet? You're at summary stage, aren't you?
No, Your Honor. We actually had a trial. We tried this case for 6 weeks in front of Judge Feehan. Goodyear had every opportunity to put on all evidence that wanted of the damages. What Goodyear did was put on evidence of 40 years of pollution, $11.6 million in damages. Judge Feehan granted a directed verdict on the theory, I believe, on the theory that the motion was for a directed verdict for policies over the level of $12 million, because that
right.
was the maximum
it's
damages they'd applied. And our position was, even if you were to adopt Goodyear's position, that you should put all the damages into 1 year, the policies over $12 million clearly aren't liable, because that's all the damage you got. And Judge Feehan granted the directed verdict. When we went to the Court of Appeals looked at it a little differently. They did not assume that all the damages would be stacked into 1 year hypothetically. Rather, they engaged in the proration analysis, and they said, well, since Goodyear didn't prove damages, if you prorate the damages over the whole policy period, then clearly, again, the high excess policies should have received a directed verdict.
If we affirm this case, what does Goodyear get from these underlying, all these lower policies? Let's say we affirm it, there's allocation. What's the next step? I mean, do you guys each sit down and do a chart and figure out your respective share? Or do you say, they didn't prove what year it's in, they lose?
Well, no, as to the Justice Stratton, that Goodyear were to establish the first thing they do, which is coverage, that they have not yet established coverage. And in fact, a directed verdict was granted on the ground that the pollution exclusion precluded coverage, notice precluded coverage, and a variety of other things. So we're in sort of an odd procedural posture. So,
let's make the assumption that we reverse on those issues, and all we have left is allocation.
And all we have left on allocation is that a proper resolution on if we lose on everything and the court finds coverage here, which I mean, frankly, it was the directed verdict stage, so we, in fairness, we get a chance to put our case on. But laying all of that aside, hypothetically speaking, if we just hypothesize that there were coverage here, and this court were to say we adopt a pro rata allocation scheme, then as I understand it, what would happen is the court applying that judgment of this court would say, all right, we have 40 plus years of damage, we have $11.6 million, divide $11.6 million by 40, and that's the amount of damage that would be assigned to each policy year.
And then you would argue exclusions, limitations, deductions, you'd argue all these legal defenses that you have on insurance.
Well, no, I was hypothesizing that we'd already established coverage. If coverage had been established, then that's the way it would be applied. As I say, Your Honor, it's a sort of an odd procedural posture.
The counsel invites on, but following up on Justice Stratton's question, I think what you also said is if you're at that point and say we said a pro rata is the way to go, you argue that you should still have, in fairness, the ability to come in and prove. We have tons of evidence, or we have substantial evidence that shows the injury all occurred in 1 year, or the damage all occurred in 1 year. So that would be the point at which that comes into play.
Conceivably, it could. I mean, the way I would envision it, if this were a trial of an environmental case, because of the odd procedural posture.
Or you would see making that argument when they say $11 million worth of damage, 41 years, we can't tell. That would be the time to stand up and say, Your Honor, wait a minute, we need to put on proof here. We believe that there's substantial credible evidence that it all happened in 1976.
Exactly. And in the context of this case, for example, if this court had, if the law of Ohio were pro rata allocation, and this case were back before Judge Feehan, and Goodyear came in and offered $11 million divided by 40, and so you've got so much per year, then at that point, it would certainly be open and appropriate for the insurers if they wish to offer evidence on what the actual damages were. Right.
So you want allocation only if it favors you, but you want a chance to disprove. You want us to allocate, but then say, but it doesn't apply to my client.
Well, I think, Your Honor, this takes us back to the contract. What the contract says is damages, that the insurance company is only liable for damages to which this insurance applies that occurred during the policy period. And so as a matter of contract construction, you know, if there could be proof of what those damages were, then that would be the desirable proof.
But you don't have to prove anything.
Exactly.
You keep saying, yes, we should have a right to desire evidence. They have to show, under your theory, that the pollution occurred at X time. Bring it into the policy period. And to get to that point, you have to ignore all the policy language. It says during the policy period. Right.
Exactly. And
just one more thing before I'm finished with it. As a generic proposition of law, you don't disagree, do you, with their first proposition of law, with the added language during the policy period?
Right.
They said for coverage for all sums, the policy owner becomes legally obligated to pay. Policy must respond for all such sums. The policy owner cannot be required to allocate. You don't disagree with that.
As long as you say
during the policy period.
Right. I mean, my argument is a plain meaning argument, Your Honor. It just, we agree with them that you ought to apply the plain text of the contract. The problem here is that Goodyear reads the first phrase and stops reading, and the plain text of the contract goes on and says something else. And you can't construe a contract by reading half of it. And that's all we ask this court to do is apply, you know, the full plain text, where it very plainly says damages during the policy period, which leads you to pro rata when there's no actual proof.
Thank you, Mr. Scott.
Does the court have any other questions? Your Honor, we would submit on the briefs on the pollution exclusion and the notice argument. We believe that the judgment of the Court of Appeals affirming the directed verdict on all those grounds was correct. I thank you, Your Honor, for the additional time.
Mr. Rose, you used your time, but take a minute for your vote.
Thank you, Your Honor. The policies do not say that they will only pay for property damage during their policy period. Goodyear proved a single occurrence with property damage that lasted many years. What the policies say is if there's property damage during that period, they will pay all sums. What they're asking is this court imply that from the definition of property damage and have that implication control over the express language all sums and control over the express language in the definition of occurrence that says a single policy will respond to damage that lasts many years. That's not how we interpret contracts.
If we were to adopt a rule that says when it's unclear as to when the exact damage occurs, you get engaged in a pro rata allocation, what problems does that cause the insured, your company or other companies, if we conclude, put on your evidence, this is the amount of the loss, this is the insurance that we had over the time frame of the loss, we can't be sure whether it happened in 76 or 84, and then our rule would convert that to a battle between insurance companies from that point on if they don't believe pro rata is fair or they believe there's some reason why it occurred in a particular year. They would have to step up to the plate at some point in the proceeding, perhaps right after you rest, saying we can't tell with their evidence. Why would that be a bad rule?
Well, Your Honor, you mentioned the concept that they brought up in regard to the Buckeye Union case, where this court acknowledged that, that insurers who are responsible to the parties have rights of contribution inter se. But what this court said in Buckeye Union, and this is the court's language, the court has to honor the policyholder's right to be made whole. Now, you've asked, how could that harm a policyholder? The examples are endless. Let's say that there is a child who's born into a house with lead paint on the walls and is exposed to that lead paste dust for 30 years and sues the paint manufacturer who has insurance in only 5 years. Are you going to tell that victim that for the other 25 years it has no coverage, it can only get a 20% recovery? In the context of that policyholder buying insurance for those 5 years that says it will pay for all sums, not some allocated portion of sums, as long as there was damage during the policy period. What Goodyear proved is that there was property damage in every one of these property periods. It was a single occurrence. It was continuous. Mr. Scott mentioned that there are cases that support him, and he talked a lot about the policy language. What's important to note is this. The cases that go their way don't focus on the policy language. When they focus on the policy language, which is the want of this court, they rule the way Goodyear suggests. The courts, the cases that go their way, rely on some, I believe, suspect concepts of general fairness and ignore the language of the policies.
Mr. Rose, let me ask you, maybe this is in the record. I'm not smart enough to pick it up in the briefs, I guess. What's the economic disadvantage to Goodyear of a proration of the coverage here?
Well, Your Honor, beginning in 1986, policies that aren't at issue here, Goodyear's policies had absolute pollution exclusions in them. There would be no coverage for claims assigned to those years. During some of our years, coverage is exhausted by other claims. If there was an allocation, there would be no coverage in those years. There is and Justice Douglas, I apologize. I don't think I understood your question earlier, but now I'm understanding what you were asking. Yes, there is an untoward economic effect on Goodyear if its right to assign claims to its all sums policies is not recognized.
So your $11 million, and you've got obviously your future, possible future damages, if it's prorated, you won't get $11 million covered.
That's right. That's right. I believe Mr. Scott and I both thank the court for its indulgence in the extra time. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn the court.